Good evening, and welcome to Mondo Eros Live on bbsradio.com. This is Stephen Otero speaking, and I welcome you to our latest broadcast here on the new adult channel. And tonight, I think this is going to be quite a spectacular evening. I think we're going to have some really great conversations because we were having some really great conversations before we started rolling. So I think we're just going to keep on going on. I have two special guests who are, in fact, two returning guests to the program. I have La Grande Dame of the Female Sexperts Writers, the author of the Sex Bible for Women, the New Tantra, and the creator of Sexy Prime, the true original cougar, Susan Crane Baker.
I feel like I should be in a cage in the zoo or something. Oh, the original
Well,
cougar.
You should be getting residuals.
Or maybe in the American History Museum.
You should be getting residuals whenever they use the word cougar.
I should be.
You should. Well, and we ought to have here as well.
You know what I don't understand is why am I still being hit on by 27-year-old boys?
I think because they sense something, they know something, you know, that, of course, Susan, you're troubled by that, right? You wouldn't want that kind of attention.
I am troubled by that, definitely.
You wouldn't want all that attention now, would you?
All my Facebook friends are, like half my Facebook friends are young boys.
I mean, you would be fully older.
Do you really want to turn away all that young, big, black cock now, do you?
Well, no.
Especially because with a nice chest, too, right?
Ooh, you mean the boy toy of the month. He is really hot, isn't he? He's 27, that boy. He's gorgeous. Yes.
And we also have with us tonight the creator of the Zolar system, Alec. Alec Zola is here with us tonight. And I'm glad to have Alex back because I know he's always going to provide us with something very interesting. Alex and I both share a common love for New York City, especially the New York of the past that we're calling vanishing New York or disappearing New York.
Thank you very much for having me back, Steve. I'm very happy to be here.
I'm glad to have you back because Alex and Susan are featured in today's Sexy Prime blog, and if you're not reading it, if you don't know about Sexy Prime, I think you must be living under a rock or something, and you should go there right away to sexyprime.typepad.com.
As I told my readers on the Zola system, I think it's an absolute must-read daily.
Absolutely, and you should also go to alexzola.com. And find them on Facebook and friend them. And find them on Twitter and follow them.
Oh, yes, definitely. Follow us on Twitter.
And buy Susan's
Alex
books.
Alex actually does do his own Twitter, but my IT gal does my Twitter.
And buy Susan's books
Twitter.
Also.
Yes, buy my books. Yes, the Sex Bible is out in paperback now. But we were talking before the show actually began, the three of us were talking about the blog post today about identities, truths and lies and secrets behind our identities. You know, who are we? Who is anyone? I had named Alex the spanking man because he'd come out of the closet about his sex life, which is basically spanking women.
One incident of corporal punishment, and I'm labeled.
Oh, come on. That's been one extreme incident of corporal punishment, but mostly that is a sex life. As you know, Steve, you've read your story.
You know what we'll do? We'll call Alex Sir Alex. How's that?
Well, not anymore. I had him beautifully positioned as a spanking man, and then I turned around, and he's written this story on his blog about a very regrettable incident in his recent past. Alex, I think you should tell it.
I was working behind the bar one day, and it was in Christmas, and the bronchial flu was going around, and I elected to work it instead of taking it off, and I ended up corking into my hand, and instead of walking right over to a hand sink to wash my hand, I wiped it right on my pants and kept on bartending. And instead of, say, getting away with it, there were some people there, and it ended up in a media newsletter, and I was entitled the Boogie Woogie Booger Boy.
And the other sad part of that is the people there, he was actually up for, we can't talk about it because he had to sign a non-disclosure agreement once they told him that they would never hire him. They didn't want anyone even knowing that they were thinking about hiring him. So. Media outlet, but he was going to have a column in which he would be the urbane and sophisticated man about town explaining men to women. And at the bar that night were three hot, young editors, girls, checking him out. And as he made his infamous move, they put their glasses down and just horror, left and grabbed their hand sanitizer and left the bar. And the next morning, I get a phone call from my pal Joe saying, have you heard the story about Alex? And I said, no, which story is that? And he said, Booger Boy.
And I knew I was in trouble when Susan called me and called me on the carpet for lunch at a local restaurant. And while I was looking for it, for the throngs of suits having their lunch, she screamed out, hey, Booger Boy, get your lazy ass over here. We have to talk. I really knew then that I was in trouble, and that lunch was not going to be like any other lunch I'd ever had.
But the interesting thing is he knew he was Booger Boy. Of all the people in the bar, he knew he was the Booger Boy.
But he did have a good comeback to it, though.
He did?
When you said, why didn't you just, swallow, and you don't you know that white men don't swallow, straight men don't swallow?
Straight men.
Straight men don't swallow. It's the truth.
Yeah.
Gay men say that spit babies don't live and straight boys don't swallow.
So I'm going to give this a news flash. Here we have the world premiere of The Zola System starring Seth Rogen coming. That's not a false rumor.
Instead of Paul Cop, we'll call it Phlegm Cop.
Yes. So talking about that led us to a discussion of identities and of who people really are. And Alex, of course, has a great deal of ambivalence about everything. He loves being known as Banking Man. But yet, whenever Alex is in a good position with something, especially professionally, he tends to pull the rug out from under his own feet. It's rather interesting to watch him do it sometimes. He tends to mess things up for himself. So I thought, perhaps he has once again messed things up for himself. I guess we'll just have to see if he ever gets a date again or, as you said when you read it, will Alex ever get laid again?
I do have a tendency to not only shoot myself in the foot, but as a literary agent said, make sure that I put a bullet in every toe just so that everybody watches me do it.
And the ambivalence brings to my mind, of course, the most famous ambivalent character in literature, Hamlet.
Hamlet, absolutely.
And I'd like to do my rendition of Hamlet for everyone now, the famous, a new version of To Be or Not to Be. Since this is the adult channel and I can get away with it, I'm going to do it. To fuck or not to fuck?
And what have you decided, Stephen?
To spank or not to spank? That is the question.
Well, on that topic, I should just say bend over. Perhaps over my knee, maybe a chair. But either way, it's okay with me.
How do you think those girls will feel when they realize what else he does with his hand? The hand that spanks them also he coughs into. I don't know.
Yeah,
take some of the glamour out of it,
I have to. I have to sympathize as a fellow. As right now, I'm suffering with seasonal nasal allergies. But
me
I gotta
too.
Say that's pretty bad.
But most of us, we manage not to hack in public.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to let him off the hook for this one. We'll just have to see how it affects his overall sexual image. It, possibly, it's going to make him, as I said, even sexier to women because he's just transgressing in so many ways, and there are women who love transgressors. Tucker Max always has dates, and even after some of the horrible.
If Tucker Max can survive that, I think Alex will.
Yes, yes. If he can survive the famous anal sex and the aftermath story. Maybe
well, you know, there's, I've read worse stories than that, actually. I've seen worse stories than that, too.
Well, you know, that's one of the reasons I wrote this story, just so that women would know where my hands had been, aside from spanking them, you know, and whacking their bottoms.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
I think if you carry, like, hand sanitizer with you, you'll be fine. Just constantly sanitize.
The amazing thing to me is that the bar didn't fire him.
Yeah.
They had security cameras trained on their bartenders. They had to. Somebody must just not have looked at anything because I would have fired him for that. I mean, he would have been out of there in 5 minutes. He would have gone right up to the bar and just out.
I think it would make a good chapter in one of Anthony Bourdain's books.
It probably would, yes. Yeah, if you know, the next time you're at a bar, pay really close attention to your bartender. You might want to sit there for a while before you order a drink, just to see how he uses his hands.
That's the reason why now I wash my hands at least 15 times behind the bar. I don't want to get, A, I don't want to get fired, and B, I don't want people to think I'm always working into my hand, just on those special occasions.
Yes, it was.
So that gets us back to this.
Yeah.
Back to this whole issue of identity, what our identities are. And sexuality is such an intrinsic part of our identity. But obviously me, and now Alex too, but obviously my public identity is all about sex writing. I'm not thought of in any other way. It's like you said, I'm the grand dame of sex writing, which by the way, I'm not that old. But
no, I'm not, that's not the way I was meaning. I was meaning that you are like the first, the original.
Oh, the original. That's right. Back to, and it was hard then, because the thing about sex, while the dinosaurs were chasing you, that was tough. That was really hard. And, you know, there were no computers. There were just caves, scratching on the rocks. It was tough!
Did you used to write these things hierographically, Susan, or?
I did, yes. Hierographically. Uh-huh. I'm going to kill both of you. You're both so dead.
This is only the fourth time today you've threatened to kill me. I think I might actually be onto something here. It's usually at least 10.
Well, what do you think about establishing one's identity, Stephen, creating a brand? What are your thoughts on that? Everybody seems to have to do it now. If you're going to be in the public eye, you have to have this cohesive identity. You have to have a brand. What do you think?
I think you have to. I think it's the way it's becoming now. So it is so pervasive. With all different media, with all the different kinds of new media, that you probably have to, because you have to, you're just taking so much from yourself, and you gotta leave something behind for yourself.
Right. That's a good way of putting it. When you create an identity, a public identity, you're also holding back something that is private, that is yours. You're putting out a whole lot, and it looks like, oh, this person is really, I'm sure people read my blog and they think she must tell everything. And of course I don't. I mean, people who know me know I have a private life. But I think you're right. It's part of what the reason that we do put it all out there is in order to hold some of it back. If we didn't put it out there, people would be looking for it and maybe they would find the parts we don't want them to find. So we hold back what is our own private stuff. But we have to have the identity these days.
And I think what we're also trying to do is, especially in terms of a public identity, we're trying to, let's say, amp up certain aspects of ourselves that are there, but are perhaps not, let's say, 100% there. And so we're creating a brand identity. I guess that's the best way you could put it, or a public identity, or a public persona, or an alter ego. You're trying to amp up that part.
Yes, right.
So that aspect can really come forward. Because let's say in your private self, you're probably a little bit more retiring or whatever, so you have to amp up that other other aspect that's more an introvert.
Am I shy in retiring an introverted?
That is something I never would claim you were, Sue.
No.
Never.
No. I think in my case, I sort of fell into the sex writing. And as I told Alex, I didn't really think about creating a brand. I just sort of fell into doing this about 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And, of course, now you have to think about a brand. You have to position yourself. And I've just been lucky that I got positioned right with the blog and with this latest set of Quiver books, the last 5 books I've done, because they're so beautiful. And nothing descends into sex tacky. And I think right now, on the Internet especially, people are exposing so much, and everybody tries to go further and further and further and do and say more shocking things and show more shocking photos, whereas you don't see that on my blog. What you see are very tasteful and erotic photos, but you don't see anything that's really shocking.
You know, it would be interesting to see in that context if Candace Bushnell or let's say the Carrie Bradshaw character was debuting today instead of 10, 12 years ago, what would that look like?
That's a good point. What would it look like? Would she be able to keep the creation the way it was then, or would she feel compelled to be a little harder, a little more X-rated? That's an interesting thought.
Because what most people don't realize is that when you go back to the original source material of that book is not a work of fiction. Book is considered nonfiction. That book is in the sociology department of the library or of the bookstore. It's not considered fiction, and Carrie is, for all intents and purposes, a real person. She is the alter ego of Candace Bushnell. So it's not, you know, a made-up character.
And I am my own alter ego.
and Alex is
his own alter ego.
Yes.
And that is one of the issues that I'm learning to come to grips with, that the Alex Zola character on the blog is me, but is my alter ego as well. And if trying to express the truth about these things without revealing too much is quite a challenge.
Yes.
I will only worry if I go to the Zola system one day and I see full frontal nudity of Alex, then I'll be really worried. I think then we will have to see about getting him unplugged.
Well, I'm going to play amateur psychologist right now. And perhaps that is, you know, like why sometimes Alex shoots himself in the foot or pulls the rug out from under him. Maybe there is a conflict between the different aspects of himself.
Probably, yeah.
Well, there's that possibility.
It's like, you know,
there's also...
It's like, how badly do you want this, Alex?
Yeah, I actually do want this rather badly. But, you know, there's also the fun stuff about shooting myself in the foot for the vicarious thrills of the public that occasionally comes out. But that kind of has to end if I want to take this to the next level.
Yeah, I managed to get him another chance with something he blew a couple weeks ago. And there are 3 people involved in the decision making, and he got 2, okay, we'll give him the chance, and 1 definitely not. And the 1 definitely not, who was outvoted, said, you tell that expletive deleted that he is on, what did he call it?
Sudden death.
Sudden death. He's in the sudden death round, and 1 wrong move. That's it. And Alex has a tendency sometimes to irritate very important people who have all kinds of money and possibly the kind of backing that might carry guns. And this is one of those important people that Alex has managed to annoy.
And
he's like, here's one day.
Well, yeah,
and then I found it Tijuana tied up. We know that there was a problem, yes.
I think, you know, it's going to provide good material for a blog, but I think it's also going to be also material for a book or a movie. That's what I could see.
I think so. And my larger question, something I've been thinking about, we were talking about earlier, is this concept women have of fixer-uppers, of finding a guy who's got a few problems and they think they can fix him up. Alex says the male equivalent is finding a woman who needs to be rescued because they think that she might be crazy, but if she has a good man in her life, he'll straighten everything out and lead her down the right path. So I suppose both genders have this idea that they see somebody and he obviously or she obviously has tons of problems, but they can fix it up or they can rescue. So
yes.
There's Alex, and I think, well, perhaps he will be fixed up and rescued. Maybe that's the appeal. Sometimes they're like Alex to some of these girls. I know women who have married men, and it's left me shaking my head. It's like, why do you marry somebody, honey? He's not making a lot of money. You know, he's not a sex symbol. He's not drop-dead gorgeous. He doesn't even seem like he's all that into you, but, you know, you want to marry him. And I believe we've hit upon the reason here. It's the fixer-upper or the rescue syndrome.
Yeah, it's the potential thing.
That's it. They're falling in love with potential. Yes.
And I think they're the potential to annoy many people.
I think it's potential. I think that they're seeing something in their own fantasy that they're trying to project, they're trying to create, they're trying to manifest it, and they fixate on this guy, and of course, when it doesn't happen, or when the obvious truth, which is obvious to everybody else, but when the obvious truth suddenly becomes to them, they finally realize, okay, this guy is not working out, this guy is not who he said he was, or more importantly, this is not the guy who I thought he was.
Exactly. Or the exhibition they make is, oh, you've changed.
Yeah.
And really, the person hasn't changed. It's just that you let go of your fantasy and you opened your eyes and you looked. And this person isn't what was in your fantasy, isn't your mythology. I think you're exactly right about that. Where does sex come into play?
I think also, you know, that's, if you look at, again, we go back to Sex in the City, the book, in the later editions of that book where she wrote her finale to the Big and Carrie romance where they did not get together. That's exactly what Big told her. He said, you know, this is just all in your own mind. You never saw me who I really was. You just had this fantasy and you let it take over.
Women do that, and I think men do it, too.
Yeah.
I hadn't really, until Alex mentioned the rescue thing, I really hadn't thought about it in the same way, but we both enter, both men and women enter relationships based purely on fantasy. Now, personally,
yeah.
I have not done that, but I have certainly gotten involved with somebody based purely on lust.
Right, and I think...
You know, if you're
going to
make mistakes, I say be dignitized.
Don't be
misled by potential.
Let's give credit to my wonderful quote, or that you make love to the man's cock, not to the guy, but to his cock.
Yes, and that inspired a post earlier this week. I love what you said about that. That you said that men want that; they want the woman to make love to their cock, not just to them, because all their lives they've been told, you know, don't think with your dick, don't let your little head make the decisions. And when some woman just really is that into your cock, it's like justifying its whole existence, and the man becomes one with the cock, and everybody's happy. See, that's what I fall in love with. I fall in love with the cock. And then 18 months later, when that is, Nan Weiss calls it the new relationship euphoria, whereas off I look at the guy and I think, you are so not a worthy life support system for this dick.
You are not dick worthy.
You are not dick
worthy. You know, we discussed this in the post earlier today about how men and their cocks, they're almost different entities between each other. You know, you look at some guys name their cock, but we almost always think of our cocks as a completely different entity than ourselves.
Yeah.
So when women are willing to look at that cock as part of us, and just like Susan was talking about, that's a massive turn on.
I don't look at it as part of the guy. I look at it as the cock. I fall for the cock, Alex. I don't fall for the man.
Well, you know, it just suddenly came to me, you know, it's There's on YouTube right now. If you go to YouTube, you will find it's an edited version of a film called a 1981 film called Exhausted, John C. Holmes, The Real Story. And that's exactly what you're seeing there. You're seeing, you know, John, if people who have been living under a rock, John Holmes, the legendary king of porn.
Legendary world's largest dick at one time.
Who had supposedly the biggest dick of all time, who had sex with 14,000 women, and which, you know, that was an untruth. It's probably more like 3,000 women, but still, that's still an accomplishment. But I think that the thing about makes that movie so fascinating
that's
to watch.
Three or four himself, don't put that down.
Yeah.
Three or four, now be nice, I think.
Yeah. Is that he's telling all these stories, and it's all bullshit, but people bought it at that time.
Yeah.
And you can finally see, you know, the difference between the public persona of Holmes and who he really was, who he's basically, you know, a white trash type of guy who basically had one thing going for him, that he had this big dick.
A big dick.
You know, and literally in that case,
that was his whole image, his whole public image.
That was his whole thing. And the other thing also was the split between Holmes and the character who he played. The character, his most famous character that he played in the movies was a private detective called Johnny Watt. And I think there's one point in the film where he says, at times, I don't know where he ends and I begin.
Now that's kind of what Alex was saying in the post, and that's kind of what you said when you were talking about having your cock made love to. Alex says that you know, men, it's an extension of them. But I said, my guy pals, to me, it's almost like they're dickless. I can't imagine they have dicks. They don't have penis oriented to me, which is why we're all pals.
Yeah.
Whereas my lovers, they seem very dominated it by their own cocks. They seem like they're very cock first, you know, no matter what else they do. They might be bankers, they might be lawyers, whatever they are, the cock is really, it's driving them. And with my guy pals, I feel like, well, they're driven by neuroses or, you know, whatever, but they're not driven by cock, which I find kind of interesting. I'm not sure that I'm right about the guys in relationships to other women, but it's how I do it in relationship to them.
No, I think that's a very bright insight on your part. I think that there are certain men who are, let's say, mind-driven, and then there are certain men who are definitely cock-driven, or that part of the body drives them, and that part
and
of
Alex
the body is in control.
Himself into trouble-driven.
And I think that there are some who just, they can't go there for some reason. Or they can only go there under certain circumstances.
Someday I want to interview you, and I want you to tell me how you like to have sex.
Okay.
I think that'll be a good interview.
Yeah.
We'll turn the tables, and I'll do the interview about your sex life.
Oh, that is one that I would definitely read. Oh, I would be right there reading the whole thing.
I'll have to go into my very creative mode then and start creating stories.
Oh, no. We're going to get to the real truth.
The real truth.
Yes, the real truth. Listen, I've learned to get the truth out of Alex. I could probably get the truth out of spies.
I think you did once already.
Really, really have to work at Alex to get him to cut through the, you know, the layers of bullshit. The Irish bartender, I call him, he's part Irish bartender bullshit, and he's part Borscht-Belt comedian. Once you get past all that and get to the truth, it takes some serious beating down.
I wonder how many people today really know what the term Borscht Belt means. If people are even aware of that term.
Yeah, it's the Catskill Mountains where all the comedians were Jewish was called the Borscht Belt originally. That was that circuit, but then it kind of expanded to mean any clubs where the Jewish comedians had played. But any of our comedians, including Seinfeld, are Jewish, you know?
And that's where they all got their training. That's where, like Rodney and all those guys.
I don't know about the really younger comedians, the ones in there.
I wouldn't say not today, but I would say the guys who were in the 50s, 60s, 70s, probably.
Oh, my God, that's right. Seinfeld and Mara and all those people are in their 50s. We've got to find some young names to talk about, Stephen. I'm putting that on our to-do list.
Well, you have Sarah Silverman with her cute as a button girl filthy mouth routine, which is quite funny and sexy all at the same time.
That's true. You know, men really find it sexy if a woman, particularly if she's wearing pearls or in you know, really good expensive clothes, and we'll talk about their cock to them. They find that very sexy. But if she's dressed like a street tramp, it's not so sexy. That's interesting about men, I think.
Yeah, it's seeing someone like a lady, let's say, dressed very elegantly, and then, like, let's say if she crosses her legs and she's not wearing underwear.
Yes, it's very impressive.
You get to see that peak.
I've learned is that I can still always get a free drink in a bar if I'm wearing stilettos and black lace top thigh-high stockings and I sit on a bar stool and cross my legs. I have really good legs. All I have to do is cross my legs, and, you know, that's it. Somebody's going to buy me a drink.
I suspect that's what's holding up a lot of the ratings on the Fox network on CNN is seeing all these very beautiful anchor women with their short skirts and, you know, with the legs out there, and you keep thinking, oh, my gosh, you're going to finally make a mistake today.
Yeah, you might be right about that.
Well, there are whole internet sites devoted to, you know, this and to the whole upskirt phenomenon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the upskirt. That's so much of that stuff is really crude.
Yes, it is. But then again, we're talking about men here, right? We're talking about men, right? So we're crude to begin with.
Yes, Alex keeps making that point over and over again, Farney. Men are crude. What's with you guys?
Because you know what?
Is our thing.
Alex has to that one.
It's just locker room humor and fart jokes seem to be the things that men really gravitate to. That, you know, South Park has made a nearly 12-year run with locker room humor and fart jokes and the occasional scatological reference.
Isn't that something that men used to outgrow when they grew up?
I don't think so. Men
don't grow up anymore. At least they used to pretend that they grew up, I guess. I think about my father and my brothers-in-law and men who were grown up when I was growing up, and they never... I mean, they were gentlemen. They never would have told a fart joke around any of us anyway.
No.
But it's very shocking.
I think men of my father's generation, the guys who fought in World War II, went through the Depression, those guys would never do that. Not in public.
Or even the next generation, even the older boomer guys wouldn't have behaved that way. I think by the time we got down to Generation X, Alex's people, you know, it all went out the window. What can I say? Good manners. They're Guyland. I believe in sexual openness and in frank dialogue and not in censoring things, and I'm certainly supportive of a lot of sexual freedom, but I also would like to see a return to a little bit more class than people display now. What's lacking now is class.
Yeah.
We just don't see much class, and I would like to see more of that. When you see someone, male or female, who like you do, you are a very classy guy, Stephen.
Thank you.
And Anton, who works with you at Sexy Spirits, the two of you are very classy gentlemen.
Yes.
Absolutely. When I first met you, that was my first impression. Classy gentlemen.
Thank you.
We don't see enough of that.
I think it's just, you know, it's something that is inbred in you, and that's the way I was brought up.
Yes.
I was brought up that way. And perhaps that might have maybe somewhat inhibited, but that's also something that I gravitate towards. So I try to sometimes let that other part of me come out. Not often.
We'll get past your inhibitions. You'll tell me.
Yes.
Or she'll beat it out of you like she beats it out of me on a daily basis. You think those conversations and those interviews are easy? No, she comes in with a whip and a chain and a chair, and she sits down, she looks me right in the eye and says, listen, Zola, you're going to tell me the truth or else. And
he tries to lie, but I won't let him. I call him on everything. I say, you have to buy the wine, you have to get the coffee, I want a donut. And you kept her home. What are you going to do next? I really make him work for these interviews. And they turn out. That's the best stuff that he's ever done is what I've been forcing him to do. He's an excellent writer, but he's really needed the whip to bring it out.
And you are an excellent writer, Alex. I really enjoy reading you. And
Alex is a fabulous writer. He is.
Guys, my ego tends to get out of control. Let's not pump it up any more than it has to be pumped up. Thank you both very much. I really appreciate it. But the whip and the chain is working for me here, and I want to keep that going.
Absolutely. And particularly when you write about New York. That's really
great. He's done some of the best writing. I would tell your listeners to go to the Zola system and look for Zen and White Noise.
Zen, White Noise, and Late Night in New York.
Yeah.
We reposted it because there's a bunch of brand new readers, and the piece was friend Marco and Susan's favorite piece on the blog, and they asked me to repost it so that the new readership could read it, and it was posted yesterday on the 20th, reposted, and it's, like I said, one of Susan and Marco's favorite pieces. It deals with walking around New York late at night and the music that I used to listen to and the people I encountered while I was doing it.
It's a beautiful piece.
I like you talk about the various beatnik literature, Mickey Spillane.
And I love when he talks about all the characters he's seen. And by the way, we really should, since Alex mentioned Marco, he's listening, and we really should give you a shout-out, Marco. We love you.
Yes,
yes,
Marco. Hello to Marco.
Absolutely.
Who is Marco?
Hello, Marco.
Are we allowed to talk about him?
No, we can't talk about
him.
No, we can't talk about him, but we said hello to him. That's good.
Okay, well, hello then, Marco. But I liked the reference to Mickey Spillane, and because I keep, you know, whenever I read a lot of Spillane when I was young, but now when I think of him, I just think of the Harlem Nocturne.
Well, that was the theme song to Mike Hammer with starring Stacey Keach, which was on in the mid-'80s.
But I remember, I don't know if you ever saw this, but there was a time, I think in the late 70s, on the old Spanish language channels, I think it was, you know, the ultra high frequency, they were showing reruns of Mickey Spillane's Mike Hammer with Darren McGavern.
I didn't see that, but that does make me wonder about Hispanic men, if they're better lovers than other men. They always say they are. Spanish men always say they're the best lovers. But you know, I've never had a Spanish man. I don't
really
know. No. I have no frame of reference there. No Spanish men.
Maybe you should interview Anton.
Part of his secrets, right? Yeah. He's got some secrets.
Well, you know, he's also, you know, he was a champion ballroom dancer, so there you go.
Yes. I think that there's something incredibly sexy about good dancing.
Yeah.
A man who can make those kind of moves. I have to come to Tango Night and watch them dance and write about that.
Well, you missed some really great dancing last night at his birthday party.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Everybody was out there dancing. It was quite spectacular, and Tango Tuesday nights, you know, it's up and running every Tuesday night, Tango Night at Sexy Spirits. So go to the Sexy Spirits calendar at www.sexyspirits.com. You'll see Tango Tuesdays.
Maybe we can get Alex to enroll in Tango Tuesdays. What do you think?
Yeah.
That way, instead of shooting himself in the foot all the time, he could learn how to dance and do something else with his feet.
Do you think there might be any women there who want to get spanked, Stephen? I
mean, I'm all for it. Particularly if we announce you as the famous spanking man is here tonight.
Wow, you never know. I mean, he'll sit down and women will be throwing themselves across his lap, you know?
Yeah. And I'll make sure that I bring a hand sanitizer and that I've washed my hands and they will have no issues with where my hands have been except slapping them on the rear end.
Yes, and no black pants.
No black pants.
Absolutely.
He only wears green pants now.
Well, yeah, that's good because green can hide the green phlegm, right?
That's exactly why he's wearing green pants, yeah. What advice would you give Alex about developing his persona, his identity, his brand? What would you tell him?
I would say to continue with the like the character of the Zohar system. And that's what I, that's what originally drew me to Alex. I liked reading about that, about the house winds and things like that, and the whole idea of life as a con game. And also, I really like his love of New York. He you know, that's, that seems to me like his true love, and, still going to these places.
No. Alex is Alex's true love.
Right. Yes.
No, actually, my true love is the corner of 20th Street and 3rd Avenue, but I keep that very hush-hush and on the down low. I don't want other corners to think I'm cheating on them. It's my favorite corner there, 20th Street and 3rd Avenue. But yeah, that's because in the middle of the winter, the grates are very hot over there, so you can always get some heat.
Oh, he's sick. What can I say? It's a challenge working with Alex. It's a real challenge, but I'm determined to bring him along here. We're going to make him famous.
Yes, absolutely, and I'll be able to say, hey, I was the first one who interviewed him.
You were the first one who interviewed him, absolutely. His very first interview.
And absolutely. As much as I try to shoot myself in the foot and shoot myself into infamy, Susan and various other people are going to make sure that I do not go to infamy but come to fame, even if they have to do it kicking and screaming and tearing out the rest of my hair.
I think you're
doing that. I don't really mind if he becomes famous, you know, after death. I mean, after I kill him. That's okay.
Well, long as after he becomes famous, he remembers his friends, you know.
Both of them that will be left.
Absolutely. That's a great career move.
Okay, Alex, it's time to cash in on you.
Yeah, well, you know, to paraphrase a song that on the first record I ever reviewed for when I was working at Spin Magazine called Invisible Means, the song is called Now That I'm Dead, and now that I'm deceased, you know, my book sales have increased, and my psychics claim to contact me, and I might even get a literary agent.
Well, there was one
our next goal.
A very similar quote that someone once said upon hearing upon the death of Elvis Presley, good career move.
It is a good career move. I'm just waiting until he writes some more. I mean, if I'm going to be a literary dick, profit from his death, I want a lot of writing there, so I'm going to try and keep him alive, maybe for another year.
Well,
he writes a lot.
I guess probably the simplest way would be to take a lot of the Zohar system and just expand that into a book.
Absolutely. Don't tell him Stephen won't do that after he's gone.
She needs me for another year at the very least because she has a very long line of women that she wants me to spank so that she can interview them so that she can really wrap that book up tight. So, you know, at least another year I'm going to be around. After that, who knows?
I'm on the family payroll, actually. You know, the brothers have already contacted me about the time scheduling and all that. So
they bought the plot.
They bought the plot, yeah. Oh, well, it's always fun talking with you, Stephen. It feels like we're just hanging around chatting. I hope we impart some wisdom to your listeners, although I'm not sure tonight what that would be.
I think there's a lot there. You just have to listen, you know, listen between the lines. But, you know, there's a lot of gems out there.
The message I would like to give anyone out there is if you are selling yourself in any way, even if you're out on the identity, you've got to have a brand, even if you're looking for a job. You have to have a brand, and I would say hone your brand. It's everything you do, the way you dress, everything about you should send the message that you're trying to send, should send your brand message. That's the thing I've learned with my own career now, and it's working better since I figured that out. That's what I'm doing with Alex. And the other thing we've learned in working together is the cooperative dialogue.
And you just had the first lesson from Susan Crane Bakos, life coach. The Bakos method.
Yes.
I just branded it.
Go to the blog. I give away a lot of free sex tips. At least once a week I give away a free sex tip.
Tell us about the blog again.
The blog is sexcrime.typepad.com. It is about female sexual empowerment, but I love men, So it's encouraging women to find their pleasure, whether they're gay or they're straight or they're young or they're old or whatever race they are, whatever ethnicity or religion they are, married or single. I try to bring women together to share to you. A lot of the women who guest blog for me, well, all the women who guest blog for me are much younger than I am. They're in their 20s. And I think that's a good thing because it brings in different voices. I like to bring in different voices. And Alex, of course, is on the blog a lot.
Yeah.
I like to bring in the male viewpoint. It's full of sex tips. It's erotica written by Kenny on Wednesdays. And Saturday nights at midnight, we have Lilith Rising, which is also erotica. We have all kinds of things on there. I love poetry, and I love jazz, and I love art. And occasionally, I find a way to mix that up into the sex. And I will guarantee you, if you have any problems with that, if you become a regular reader of the blog, problems, you'll figure out how to solve your problems. You'll be able to make it work.
And
that's what my blog is, very practical, but yet there's also a lot of passion and art and literature and fun in it too.
And you have a really great
blog, which is all kink.
And you have a really great post up there. You have a really great post on how French women don't sleep alone.
Oh, I love that book. You were at the party. We all three were at the party.
Yes.
For Janie Cat Callan's book, French Women Don't Sleep Alone.
And most importantly, wear matching underwear.
Matching underwear is so very important. That's why I just buy black lace. You can't go wrong. If all your pieces are black lace, they're going to match.
That's all. That's all you need.
That's all you need, ladies. And, you know, stockings, not pantyhose. Pantyhose are dreadful. And high heels, you don't have to wear them all the time, but you really should wear them sometimes when you're going out because they're sexy. And they make you feel sexy and then love them. And it's good sometimes just to leave them on when you're in bed.
French women do not date.
No, French women don't date, apparently. Although they actually really do date because they like men to take them out and buy dinner and things. So I would call it dating. But they just don't call it dating.
Yeah, they don't. It's not a job interview.
It's definitely not a job interview. Alex, do you have any words of wisdom to
Yes, let's hear from Alex on the Zoller system.
The Zoller system is, as you were saying, basic life advice my father gave my brothers and I on how to deal with the world. And as I've been writing it and have been blogging more and more, I have discovered what I'm really writing about is my own attempts to, as an aging Gen Xer, to grow up and become a man up, as they say. And, so, you know, there are certain things I would recommend not doing in public, much like, you know, Fleming in your hand and then wiping them on black slacks. And, you know, I use the blog as touchstones for topics as diverse as New York City and spanking.
Which actually go, New York City and spanking go together.
Because if you're not spanking somebody, New York City is spanking you. So,
yes.
Or at least that's the way it used to be.
Yes, the old New York did.
Absolutely.
Before Giuliani.
Yeah, those of us old enough to remember pre-Giuliani days. But we owe him a lot. I mean, he did get rid of a lot of things that were annoying.
Yeah.
Like those creeps who would stand at the door of the ATM machines and, you know, ask for money. Well, it was kind of scary in a very aggressive way. But he got rid of some stuff that we needed to get rid of.
Yeah, you don't have to. You can walk up 8th Avenue now without having to look over your shoulder.
Yes, exactly. It would be nice if we could have a safe city and still have some of the interesting elements that we're losing. Alex writes a lot about that.
Yes.
About the exciting and interesting and quirky things that we lost over the years.
I see that we have all kinds of, folks asking for money again, so perhaps the regress is beginning. Maybe in a safe way, maybe not, but who knows? We're going to find out in the next few months, I suppose.
Well, I think we're going to see the arrival of, I'm going to steal a line from Richard Metzger, so I'm giving him full credit right now, shabby socialism.
Shabby socialism. Huh. Well, who knows? My banker friend tells me that we've bottomed out. And it's going to take a while. We're going to sit on the bottom for a while, but then we're going back up. So let's hope, huh?
Well, what's it that you like to say about white guys? You suddenly discover that you're not all what it is?
Yeah, I think I think the reason that white guys become so uninteresting at middle age is they, all their lives, they thought they were the best. They thought they were all that.
Yeah, they're all that.
Of superiority. And when they hit 40, you get to look around and realize all that. And it's disconcerting, and they become kind of dull, stodgy, and a lot of them get really fat.
I think that's probably what's happening to the economy right now.
Yeah, well, black men at that age don't seem to fall into the same traps, and I'm generalizing, of course. You know, I'm generalizing. But white culture does not support male sexuality very well, and it certainly it tells men that they're special for too many years, and then one day they have to realize they're not all that. And I think that's where a lot of problems come in for middle-aged men. They finally look in the mirror and they realize something the rest of us have known for a while.
Yeah,
over to you, Alex.
Well, the punch has hit me, and I suppose that's exactly what I'm dealing with now, realizing that, hey, I'm not all that, and it's time to stop, you know, doing these things and move on and, you know, move on with everything. And it's definitely been a disconcerting feeling to realize at 40 that you're not all that.
Well, I can say that facing next month, next June 17th, I'm hitting the big 5-0. But I would say that probably this is the most challenging part of my life, but it's also the most interesting part of my life. And I've always been aware of the fact that it was not going to happen for me as a young man. I was told that a long time ago.
You've said that before, and you are a really sexy and attractive middle-aged man. You are good looking. Most of them are.
Oh, thank you.
You've grown into really matinee idol good looks.
That's also was also
don't do that.
That's also
Steve, I'm jealous you kept all your hair.
Yes, I'm keeping it in its wonderful gray. I'm not going to dye. I'm not going to color it.
Well, if that's your identity, it works for you.
I think so. Yeah, it was accepting it, you know, and getting over that resistance. But then, you know, I think, you know what, people say it looks good, so you know what, I'm going to go for it.
Absolutely. I can't wait to interview you about your sex life. You start making notes.
Yeah,
let me see them so that I can add a few things to them.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me Alex knows about your sex life, Steve? I'm a little worried now.
No.
Be afraid. Be very afraid, Steve. Just a few things here, therefore. That's all I'm going to give her. Just a little things.
Okay, this is something to look forward to.
Yeah, I think it would be, it'll be interesting. It certainly will be cathartic. I know that the one time we sat down and talked, it was, you know, you're a very good interviewer, and you're very intuitive.
Only about
some. Otherwise, she's very, very good at beating people up, trust me.
Yes.
I missed my calling key, and I should have been a dom.
You are. You still have time.
I have time. You're right.
You'd be perfect right now. You're at your prime to be a dom. I'm surprised you haven't done that already.
I know. I should have. I really should have. You're right. It's not too late. I need to explore that aspect of my identity.
Yeah. I mean, you know that. You know, there was a couple articles. When this whole crisis first started, that women were getting jobs, part-time jobs as doms and making money. And
yeah,
they loved it because being a dom, you could make money, but you didn't have to have sex.
Yes, yes. I wouldn't want to ever have to have sex with somebody that I didn't want to have sex with.
Right.
I think prostitution must be a very hard job because I can't even kiss somebody I don't want to kiss. If I'm a non-binary guy, I can't.
That is why they
don't put your hands
personas.
On me.
now, if you want to discuss about personas, the creation of personas, I would say also porn stars are really great at that.
Yes.
Because they create this whole persona.
They are. They do.
In some cases, that persona takes over.
I interviewed Jamie Lynn last summer. She has done some softer porn, and she posed for the Orgasm Bible, and she's just gorgeous in that book. I love the book with her as the model. So I did an interview with her for the blog, and she's just the nicest, sweetest California girl. She goes to the beach in her cut-off jean with her boyfriend and her dog, and you know, she's just a real sweet girl and writes poetry. She's just as nice as she can be. So, yeah, they definitely create personas. We all have to create our public persona. Even if we have a small public, we all have to create a persona for it.
Yeah.
And the challenge is creating that persona and realizing that it's just that, your persona, and there are other things about you that, you know, you're holding back a little bit, but giving the public what they want. And that's the challenging thing about creating a persona, is understanding where that line is.
And Alex in the public clearly wants bare butts and spit.
and with that, I would say that we're going to wrap, and I think that was a really great conclusion to tonight's broadcast. I'd like to thank again Susan Crane-Bakos, and I'd like to thank Alex Zilda for being my guest tonight.
Thank you very much for having me.
I think we should have this as a sort of, I'd like to have you on as a sort of a regular guest. So I think we should do this maybe like once a month or whatever, or just whenever I can't get anybody else.
Well, you can't get anybody else, we're happy to do it. That's a great idea.
But I think we should have you on regularly.
We would love that. That would
absolutely.
We can call it part of Alex's ongoing therapy.
Great. Well, I'd like to thank everyone, and also for those of you who have been listening, thank you very much once again. This is Stephen Otero, and you're listening to Mondo Eros on BBSRadio.com.